This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. As my professor dad always said, when writing a term paper, be concrete. Well, Bill Gates, has a book out this week called How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. It's about going beyond electric cars and electricity generation to bring net production of climate change gases down to, he says it has to be zero, net zero. He's got many approaches, including a very concrete one. Mr. Gates, welcome.
Great to talk with you.
So among the five questions that apparently you ask when people talk solutions to climate change, one of them stands out. It's number two on your list. You ask, what does this do about cement, the construction material? Why is that so important to you?
People need to understand that there's lots of sources of emissions, almost everything around them, you know, plastic, wood, steel. Cement's a great example. It's over 6% of worldwide emissions, and yet we don't have a way of doing it that's clean that doesn't cost dramatically more than twice the price. So people think it's just passenger cars and electricity. They're going to miss what we need to do to get to zero.
I mean, it's the thing about cement, which is a key component of concrete that we build everything out of, it seems, is that it requires lots of energy to heat it up in its manufacturing process, but also the chemical process that makes cement releases CO2. I mean, it's a real CO2 thing.
That's right. There's the two sources. Limestone gets heated to pull out the calcium, and that chemically releases CO2. And then if you're burning, say, natural gas to make that heat, that also creates CO2. And, you know, the world is going to keep building buildings just for the basic sheltering needs in the developing countries. And so we can't ask them to stop doing that, but we need to give them an innovation so that cement isn't super expensive. And the U.S. has got the innovation power. We need to get our brightest minds, both at the basic R&D level and the startup company level, working on cement and create demand for any cement that's starting to lower that extra green premium.
All right, the green premium. You wrestle with this throughout the book. It may be one thing to say I have an innovative process that doesn't use much CO2 and it creates this great building material. But if it costs a lot of money, I mean, how much is anybody going to actually use?
That's right. And particularly if they can say that the U.S. is responsible for all these historical emissions. And so, you know, we're not going to subsidize countries because that's trillions of dollars. Unless we can bring these green premiums down by about 95% through innovation, I don't think we'll hit the goal of zero by 2050.
I mean, cement and concrete, we've been using that for hundreds of years. Is there actual innovation going on in this space?
One company looks like they can cut it by 30% just by re-injecting CO2 into the final product, which is kind of amazing that that works. And there's dozens of other companies that our Breakthrough Energy Ventures Group have funded that have different ideas. And if you bring them together and they all work at scale, you could bring that green premium down a lot.
Wait, essentially a carbon sequestration, they call it, by injecting CO2 into the concrete so the slab just permanently holds the CO2?
Exactly. That's a Canadian company called Carbon Cure is one of the ones doing that. And currently it's a 10% reduction, but their next generation should get up to 30%. So it's a start. You know, we need on a market, we need people to buy that greener cement, not green cement, and so that we start to scale it up and get the cost down like we did with solar panels.
And when it comes to addressing climate change, we always talk about ways of storing energy, better batteries to store energy when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing or if the grid doesn't need all the power that is on hand. But in the book, Mr. Gates, you seem a little battle-weary on this subject.
Well, there's no guarantee that we can make this battery that would have to be 20 times improved to store all that electricity. And so to maintain reliability, we may need sources that don't depend on the weather, like nuclear fission, providing up to a quarter of our energy generation. So during those times with the big cold front over the Midwest, we don't all freeze to death.
But you've invested a lot of money trying to encourage innovation in batteries, and It hasn't really revolutionized batteries?
Well, the battery for the electric car, which is, you know, almost within a factor of 2 to 3 of being totally competitive, that there is progress. That's a much easier problem than this grid electricity storage, where, you know, every battery we've ever made couldn't store a week of U.S. electricity. So there are many approaches. You know, some of the companies who pursued this failed, but there's dozens more with good ideas that I'm investing in. And so either we need this big storage miracle, or we need some form of nuclear to make sure that it's green and reliable.
Now, you address this issue in the book about nuclear power, maybe smaller scale projects, maybe some underground. You know that those plants can go horribly wrong. I mean, that's the experience we've had with nuclear power in spectacular ways.
Well, providing energy, we've had, you know, coal mining accidents, natural gas pipelines blow up, you know, particulate causing bad health. And yes, nuclear, to get that to be used broadly, we need a completely new generation where it's inherently safe because there's no high pressure. And so that fourth generation design from scratch nuclear is what a company called TerraPower is working on. And, you know, the demo plant that's being done will prove out whether that can work or not.
And you have an interest in that. Some of these newer approaches to generating nuclear power require enriched fuel, enriched uranium. And that worries people worried about the fuel getting into the wrong hands around the world.
That's right. You always want to make sure that it's never a source of weapons material. Eventually, you could move away from enriched uranium and just breed in the reactor itself. But yes, nuclear has lots of challenges, but so does every other path. And because climate change is so important, we need to pursue many paths to make sure we actually get a solution, because 30 years is a very short period of time.
And to be clear, you actually have an interest in a company, TerraPower, that is trying to do work in this area with a new generation of nuclear power?
That's right. Because of my interest in climate, I got that going as a potential solution. You know, I don't know that it'll work, or even if it works, that the public will accept it. But, you know, along with investing in many storage companies, raising the odds of solving climate is worth taking big risks if it proves out to be super, super safe.
Can I ask why your goal, you make it very clear in the book, why is your goal net zero? I mean, you must have told your people a million times over the years, the perfect is the enemy of the good, but you want zero as in none, nada, zip. I mean, wouldn't phasing down our carbon dioxide and carbon production be more reasonable than setting success at zero?
Well, if you don't mind, you know, all the corals dying and Miami Beach disappearing and island countries being underwater and farmers near the equator starving and trying to migrate up to northern latitudes, you know, CO2 stays in the atmosphere for thousands of years. So if you have positive emissions, you're driving the temperature up on an ongoing basis. And that's more crop failures, more days humans can't go outside. It gets pretty extreme, and those natural ecosystems won't come back.
You're saying you don't have a choice, that zero is just mandatory. We don't have a choice.
Well, if you care about not having the sea level rise go up dramatically or losing all these natural ecosystems, I mean, some number of humans can keep moving north. But, you know, it's going to kill 5 times as many people per year by the end of the century as the pandemic is today and cause massive instability. So it's not a good thing if you don't bring the numbers down.
You refer to your journey on this issue of climate change because, you know, we think of you as a technology guy. We think of you as the philanthropist very focused on global public health. And sometimes this notion of we have to mitigate climate change can mean poorer countries don't get to have what we have. And that used to worry you more. So you've actually evolved on this?
No, I think that the developing countries deserve to have decent shelter and air conditioning. And that's why you can't just reduce consumption all the way to zero. We need a way of making all these physical products, including electricity and aviation fuel, that even if you make a lot, you multiply by zero and there's no emissions. And the people who are suffering the most are the poor countries who did nothing to cause this problem. So we also need to invest in adaptation, giving them better seeds, better water storage, so that the amount of suffering, even in a 2 degrees increase, is limited.
How do you feel about systems that California's had some success with, cap and trade, and essentially trading credits between companies that do a better job being cleaner when it comes to carbon and those that will buy them because they're dirtier?
Yeah, those systems have value. They don't solve the whole problem. You're never going to do anything that has a high green premium because the imputed cost per ton in those systems never gets you working on the hard stuff. And that's, you know, a big message of the book. We have to drive the innovation pipeline to work on the hard stuff. We focused entirely on the easy stuff, which is passenger cars and using solar and wind to generate electricity. And that's not even a third of the problem.
And that's one of the big takeaway points of this book, right? We often think of transportation. You know, if we can figure out how to get cars around without using fossil fuel, but it's a multi-layered challenge, and you come at it from many different directions.
Right. When you have so many sources, just meeting short-term goals alone won't get you there. We should be putting dramatically more into the hard stuff, including at the basic R&D level. My Breakthrough Energy's Ventures Group is funding a lot of new ideas to bring down green premiums. But without government doing more, the innovation pipeline won't move fast enough.
Because governments can tolerate big risk on things that might pan out spectacularly or might not.
Yeah, as you see in health innovation, the U.S. has been fantastic at driving basic research. And a lot of the companies are created here in the U.S. and great jobs and invent new medicines. And that same cycle of innovation, as people are demanding clean energy products, the U.S. can take its innovation power and create industries around it. And so we need an increase in R&D.
Bill Gates, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, founder of Breakthrough Energy, a coalition of groups that work towards speeding up sustainable energy. And you may know him from his Microsoft years. Mr. Gates, thank you very much.
Thank you.